Hello, welcome to the Grovecast. This is a podcast by the pastors of Cedar Grove for the people of Cedar Grove. And I'm Barry, of course, and Jason on the controls today. And my special guests are Tracy and Lucinda Guppy. Guys, hello. Welcome.
Thank you.
I'm really excited about visiting with you guys. And some of our folks have heard some of your story. Last November, we got a chance for you to share on a Wednesday night and go into great detail on that, and really appreciated that time. I know the people that were there really did. So if you've not had a chance to hear the story, I'd love for you to stick around. This is the third part of our series on dealing with people that have been on mission from Cedar Grove, or not necessarily from Cedar Grove, but that are at Cedar Grove now is the way I should say it. Mike and Jeannie Puckett were our first couple. They'd had experiences in Central America. Bobby and Rand Lawson, longtime jail ministry, but the last few years God's kind of changed a little bit of the direction of their ministry. But you guys have a different type of mission experience, because it was not one of those two-week mission trips and we get to come home type of thing. How long were you on the mission field and where?
Good.
We were in South Asia. We're not supposed to say where, but
okay.
We were in South Asia, and that on the other side of the world, and we were there for 2 years the first time, 2 years again, and then 3 years before we came home.
Okay. Now, you're not supposed to say where, but what about me? Am I allowed to? Because it's going to make some of this podcast kind of tough.
It's all right.
Okay now. We're not there.
So. We were in Nepal.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. But while you were there, that was something that was pretty important. Now, this is not going out over Facebook and all that kind of stuff. It's kind of our local church people that will be listening. So, and you've been removed from that for several years now.
Right. Yes.
So this is sometime in the past. And so Nepal, north of India, up in that
territory. It's a small country between northern India and China.
China.
In the Himalayas.
All right. And I think some people, when they hear of that area, think of the Himalayas, but there's other region. In other words, it's not all just mountains.
Right.
But there's a little bit of everything there. Well, let's talk a little bit. And part of what I'm wanting our people to catch through these is what are some things that God did in the people's lives to bring them to a point where I'm going to go? A lot of Christian people will have those thoughts of, man, it'd be kind of neat to go on a mission trip. But then there's the rest of the people then that make that decision, I am actually going to go. So I want to try to capture a little bit of what you were dealing with, thinking about in that process. So what was kind of the time frame of when you began to realize God wants us to go on mission, and begin to realize then that meant full-time mission work? So just kind of share a little bit of that story.
Well, we never, or at least let me say I, had never in my wildest dream thought I'd ever be a missionary.
Okay.
At the time, we were living in Neosho, Missouri, and I was a police officer, and Lucinda worked at Scholastic as a call center for selling books to schools. And God probably spoke to me when he did hers, just I wasn't listening, and Lucinda was. Mm-hmm. You know, our wives are sensitive that way sometimes. And she asked me about being a missionary, and it's like, I'm a cop. I will live and die being a cop. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she prayed for me, and it was probably about 6 months, something like
somewhere
that.
Somewhere in there, mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that God started changing my heart with different things at work, at home, just opening my eyes to, you know, and calling me to the mission field. Mm-hmm. You know, we first started off, we went to Mexico on a mission trip.
Before we went to Nepal.
Okay. I went up to Washington State on a mission trip. And, you know, but in the back of our minds is like, God's calling us full-time to the mission field. And we applied with the IMB, and that's a long process.
Mm-hmm.
We applied with the IMB. They finally accepted us, you know, our stuff. We went out there for face-to-face interviews, and over the weekend, it was like a 3-day weekend, we met with a lot of different people, and during that time we're supposed to pick a place where you're supposed to go. Mm-hmm. And we had no idea. We just knew we're called to the mission field. We don't know where we're going to go. And they rolled out these library carts full of books for all the missionary requests that missionaries on the field had written.
Three-inch notebooks.
Yeah, three-inch notebooks full of missionary requests. And we had no idea even where to start. And so I asked the guy, I said, well, where's all the lost people at? And he said, the highest percentage of lost people in the world is in South Asia. Okay. He said, if you want the most lost people, go to East Asia, which is China. Mm-hmm. And so we started praying together and separately about that, started going through notebooks. And when we was there, we prayed that if God can show me three places, he can show Lucinda three places. So we never talked about the request. We made our own list, but we prayed a lot together and separately. And at the end of the weekend, before we were supposed to go tell them, we was outside on a sidewalk. We prayed one last time, and we switched our list, and we had three jobs. And they were the same three jobs in the same order. First one was Nepal. The other two were in China. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I'm pretty sure this is where God wants us to be. You know, that wow. kind of confirmed that.
Sure.
In our hearts. So,
Lucinda, when he's thinking, I'm a cop, I'm always going to be a cop. So God obviously began to work in your life as far as planting. So was there something specific that happened that kind of planted that seed? Or
yes.
is that just something over a long period of time?
Well, when I was a child, from mm-hmm. early on, I remember mm-hmm. reading Discovery Magazine and GAs and talking about it all the time and thought, you know, that'd be neat. Mm-hmm. But never thought God called me. Excuse me. But one day, Pastor Rick Hedger was just talking about an opportunity to go through the Missouri Baptist Mission Board to Iraq. Mm-hmm. And it was like God came down on my head. I can't explain it any better than that. It was like he came down and it was like, okay, Lord, whatever you want, whatever I have to do, okay. And that's when I confronted Tracy after church about it and asked him about what did he think about being a missionary. And you heard his response.
Yeah.
So for the first time, literally, and probably in 18 years of marriage, mm-hmm. I did not talk to him about it again. Instead, mm-hmm. I prayed because I knew I couldn't change his heart. Mm-hmm. And I knew God could. And mm-hmm. if he was calling me to the mission field, mm-hmm. he wasn't just calling me. He would be calling him too.
Right.
So I just started praying for Tracy.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said you went on some mission. Did you guys get to go on some of the smaller mission trips?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. With
together a little bit and start, mm-hmm. okay, with your church.
Yes.
Now, and let's explore that for just a minute. So the church where you were at then, what were they doing in order to get those, like, were there several people from the church that went? Was there, you know, how did your church kind of promote the mission idea?
Yes.
Our home church, Calvary and Neosho, they were very mission-minded, and they had opportunities to go different places at different times during the year. We went to Mexico, went across the border, was it Matamoros or somewhere?
I believe so, yes.
Down there. And we stayed in a orphanage, mm-hmm. and we was working with kids and families that lived in a dump. We went out there doing evangelism.
And you're probably talking literal dump.
You don't literal.
Yeah, yes. You don't mean like the house was a dump. You
no,
mean
it was
a
dump.
A dump where they
That's
dumped
where those people trash. Left or
and
lived.
And they were out of water. The well dried up.
Yeah.
So that was an opportunity.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we worked with them. You know, with those people, and you know, did evangelism, and they had a little church in the dump, and we had some evening services there with them, and we helped build a house for a pastor there at the dump. It's kind of, I mean, it's just kind of crazy thinking mm-hmm. you're going to build a house on top of a dump. I mean, it's like trash everywhere. It's like, yep, that's what we were doing.
Wow.
So, but we did that, you know, as a like I said, after Christmas, we went down there, and that was our last mission trip before we went to the mission field. Mm-hmm. And we took my mom and dad with us, mm-hmm. and kind of, you know, got them as like this would be a family mission trip, you know.
Oh, wow.
And we're going to the dump.
Yeah, Yeah, that's kind of a unique story in that. So you had some opportunities to do that, began to see what was involved process. So you go through the application, IMB. Obviously, when you're accepted, they don't just give you a packet and say, see ya.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Especially you're going to a country. You do not know the language. You don't know the culture. I mean, there's a lot to learn. So
yes.
What? I know this is a long time period, but tell just a little bit about the training process, or what are some of the key things you had to do to be trained to even attempt this?
Well, it's called the International Learning Center, at least it was then. I'm not sure if that's changed.
Right.
But they
right.
do teach us specifically, we are separated into, what do they call the South Asia?
Yeah,
South
it was
Asia
called the
thing.
South Asian region.
Regions.
Okay.
And then people from those regions that's been to those places before get to talk to you and tell
okay.
you about the culture. And it is a big learning experience. You learn about, we did activities like having a secret meeting like they do in China. You
secret
know, and,
church type of a thing.
And mm-hmm. thinking, you know, the spies could be coming. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it was, they tried to put it as real as possible. Mm-hmm. And we even had, what was the training called when they came with?
I can't remember the name of it, but we were meeting all together, and then these terrorists came in, you know, with guns. It's like, get on the floor, and, mm-hmm. you know.
And now, that's in your training? Or
in
that's,
the training.
Oh, that's in the training?
That's in
yeah.
our training.
Oh, wow.
And they pulled some people out, you know. And, I mean, they were slapping them around, physically slapping them around. And,
yeah.
You know, I mean, husband and wife. And I was just sitting there praying. I mean, I've been a cop.
Right.
And in the military.
Like, and in yeah. the military, and it's like, if somebody lays a hand on my wife, I'm probably going to die.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to go off
in real life.
It's like, yeah. this may not be a
but
missionary
it really
response,
tests,
but it
we had,
tests you.
There was even a camera in the room where they took them in
so
as prisoners so that we could get the shock value and the understanding
oh my God.
And
wow.
things that you could do to help each other and encourage each other and possibly get away and make friends and mm-hmm. with the captors and things like that to help yourself. And it was incredible. It probably really was. We prayed that Tracy
oh my
would
goodness,
not get
yes.
chosen. We knew it was going to happen. And we didn't know what was going to happen, but they told us that it was going to have this training. And they did ask everyone who had police or mm-hmm. army training. I'm like, oh, Lord, please make that be in fact or not let him be picked because if somebody's going to get hurt,
yeah.
he probably hurt somebody,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah. I mean, at that time, I was, you know, I had
just retired.
Just quit the police department like at the end of January and in March on her birthday, March 19th, we went to ILC and started that training. So, you know, it's like,
he was in good shape. Good
shape.
All the
for good those of you don't know, Tracy's what, 6'4"?
Uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah, so 6'4", pretty good shape. So,
yeah.
yes.
Yeah. And used to fighting when he needed to.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, the training, it was very good training. I mean, very hands-on. I mean, they had bathrooms. They had squatty potties. You know, they didn't have Western toilets. There was a hole in the ground. It's like, this is what to expect. You know,
I'm pretty sure that's a
potty.
Word, Jason, that's never been heard on the podcast before.
Really? Okay.
On the Grovecast, yeah.
So, you know, they had things like that set up, and, you know, they worked with you in your region. Then they, you know, had the basic knowledge. You know, I mean, doctrinally, they're teaching, you know, it's like, you're Southern Baptist. Here's what Southern Baptists believe, and Baptist Faith and Message 2000. We went through that, had classes, you know, and they're good classes for anybody.
Yeah,
you know, what do we believe about God, about Scripture, about God the Father, Son, Holy Spirit, sin, man?
Mm-hmm.
And so we, you know, because we were not trying to make Baptist churches. Mm-hmm. They call them Baptistic in their beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
Baptistic,
you know,
okay.
But we didn't really care what shingle they hang,
right, right.
you know, hung on the door, but you know, we wanted to make sure that they were, you know,
biblically
scripturally,
sound was the main
doctrinally
thing.
Sound.
Right.
And so we had those, you know, along with everything else.
Okay. Well, and one of the everything else then is the language. And that's kind of where the thing that I would think of first. I wasn't thinking about self-defense and all that, but go ahead.
Well, the language.
We did not get
any
training.
We did not get any language training.
Because they didn't have anything. And even now, like,
oh wow,
what's it called?
Rosetta Stone.
They don't have
they
Nepali.
Didn't have Nepali.
If
you were
there's
in East Asia.
Like it.
If you were in East Asia, you had to learn Chinese. They had
Mandarin.
Chinese Mandarin
okay.
classes. But for us.
We had to wait until
and
we got
we
on
had,
the field.
South Asia is so different. Mm-hmm. I mean, even like for India, you can't just say, what are you going to speak? You know, we're going to learn Hindi.
Right.
It's like, well, Hindi may not work if you're going to South India,
mm-hmm.
you know, or some village. So there wasn't a standard language like if you go to China and learn Mandarin.
Mm-hmm.
So they waited until you actually got in country, and then it's like it's immersion, you know. And
wow.
Yeah.
So.
Well, one great thing about ILC is they had us take classes to be able to speak English, not speak, to teach. We were certified to teach English as a second language.
Okay, sure.
So that was incredible for us, basically because of our visa after the first 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So just wanted to throw that
out
there.
But it also, they did have classes on things to do to help you pick up a foreign language.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, you know, while we didn't learn the Nepali language, we had classes. It's like, you know, try to learn these things, learn these phrases, and so they did have classes to help you out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that kind of leads me into the next thing then, with obviously the training part of that. So once you're kind of getting on the field and you're landing there, what were some of the most difficult aspects of what you were trying to wrap your minds around, or the logistics, and just what were some of the things that you got there and go, oh no?
Let me tell you a really good tip that they taught us when we were in ILC.
Okay.
They said, whatever your standard is, make it low. Keep your thoughts that your expectations are extremely low. And whatever happens is better than what you expected. And it is true.
Expect the worst.
Yes.
That was
it's true. It's really, really true. If you grasp this and go, okay, we have no idea if our new apartment, or not new, but our apartment has Western toilets or squatty potties. Be ready to just have a squatty potty or an outdoor one, whatever mm-hmm. they have.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, those kinds of things. And we got to our apartment, like, we got a Western toilet. Yes.
Yeah.
So that was a big plus. Yeah.
It is.
The whole decision on the apartment that we rented was that if they got a Western toilet, we'll take it.
We'll take it.
You know, I mean, that was it was like, yeah, we can deal with anything else.
It was also
else,
in our people group area mm-hmm, of the
yeah,
mm-hmm. of that city, too.
Yeah.
So
did you have a specific mission when you got there as far as how do we get started? Did you have some connections mm-hmm. as far as people that have some connections formed, or were you just pretty much, here we are, let's begin sharing the gospel?
So our original job was church planters for the Gurung people. And the Gurung is just the name of a people group.
Gurung.
G-U-R-U-N-G.
Gurung. Yes.
Okay. And our boss, his family, they were there on the ground, and they're the ones who had this request. And so they had some contacts that we started working with, started to know, you know, get to know those people. And how long were they there before they left, though? About 2-3 months?
When we got there, you mean? Yeah, 2 months.
Yeah, we were still in language when they left. We had 3 months of language, and then they're like, out the door and start working.
Hmm.
And but anyway, we did have contacts with them. We lived in the middle of this area. Everybody was Gurung, you know, and so as soon as we walked downstairs from our apartment, our landlord was Gurung, you know, and you start talking to them and all the neighbors, and, you know, you just start making your own contacts and start,
mm-hmm.
you know, sharing the gospel, making disciples, you know, where you're at, and then going to villages, plotting, you know, what villages we want to go to, and to try to, with the intention, you know, we are church planters and we want to start churches. You know, and we teach them, here's what a church is, here's what a church does, and, you know, that first believer, you know, we start teaching them that, and, you know, they're going out there making disciples, you know, they share the gospel, you know, and somebody comes to faith in Christ, and it's like, hey, the two of us. Mm-hmm. You know, all three of us want to be a church and mm-hmm. doing the same thing. And it just kind of, you see God grow that into, you know, into a, from a Bible study group into a church.
Mm-hmm. Even the language study in Nepal was good because we could use it. And Tracy went to like Buddhist monasteries and things. And we had three questions that we were asking people. What is sin? What's the other one?
What is salvation?
And who is God? And knowing, you know, sin to them is way different than us. Mm-hmm. You know, salvation, it's totally different. They don't even have a concept of Christian salvation.
No.
And then who is God? They have 330 million, mm-hmm. million
yeah.
gods.
Yeah, we've talked about that some because of our connection with the Bhutanese church
Thomas.
And mm-hmm. Dr. Thomas and
right.
things like that. So for a lot of our people, that's not a foreign concept to mm-hmm. hear. But for somebody, that's kind of the first time they've heard that. It's mm-hmm. how is that even possible
mm-hmm.
type of thing. Yeah.
It's eye-opening.
Is there a book that lists all 330 million?
I don't think they know what they all
yeah.
are.
Yeah.
I've never seen that. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Like, wow.
But, you know, in a place like Nepal, there's more foreign gods, there are more places, more little temples to worship a false god than there are houses for people to live in.
Oh, that's the truth.
Wow.
So, you know, when you think about that, it's like, so, you know, every 10 little housetops is like, well, 9 of those are foreign god places and the other one's a
house.
A house for people.
So lots of idols, lots of like visual idols mm-hmm. type of thing as well. In that.
Yes.
So how did the people, did they look at you guys like you had two heads when they came, or were they kind of accepting or curious? Were they willing to talk to you? What kinds of things did you find there?
Most of the Nepalese that we met absolutely adored Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a big help, because
mm-hmm.
it's not like we're small and we are short. You know, most men are not taller than me.
Right.
You know, so Tracy's like a foot and a half taller than them,
right.
almost, it feels like.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
My best, the one guy I went trekking with probably more than anybody else, and he spoke no English, but he was probably about 5'4".
Mm-hmm.
He was 10 years older than me. But we go out to villages, you know, and it's like, you know, he's like, he'd be saying, bye, that's little brother, even though, I mean, you know, younger brother.
Yeah.
But he's like, we're going to tell a story. What story? David and Goliath. And I'd always say, do I get to be David this time?
Mm-hmm. Oh.
He's like, no.
No. Okay, yeah.
I'm David.
It took me a minute there. David and Goliath. Okay, got it. Yeah, David
yeah.
and Goliath.
He's 5'4". I'm 6'4". He's like, no. Bye, you're going to be Goliath.
You're going to be Goliath.
I think so it's like
I'm
4'11".
Yeah.
I'm always getting killed in these Bible stories.
You don't ever win the battle.
Get to be the good guy.
Yeah, that would warp somebody's, a new believer's understanding of the Bible completely if Goliath wins this one.
Yeah.
So I noticed you used the word trekking, and I noticed that yesterday you were talking about trekking. Mm. Which I'm assuming you mean walking, but
yes.
a great deal of your travels were on foot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were places that you had to get to, you just weren't going to drive type of thing. So
there's no way to drive.
No way to drive, yeah. So, or is there something more to trekking than just getting there?
Trekking's just walking.
Okay.
You know, it's
or scrambling.
Scrambling. But, I mean, you jump in a bus and go as far as you can. You know, and when the bus, you know, makes that last stop, you get out and start walking. And I guess the farthest I have walked was like 15 days away from the road until I kind of made this big circuit where there's a Jeep that brought me down the mountain
mm-hmm.
from the other side. And but it was a 15-day trek, you know, where we were meeting with churches along the way, encouraging them and teaching them. And then there's other times where we're just going to a village, you know, it might be just one day's walk. You get there and it's like, we're going to stay here for a week
mm-hmm.
or, you know, 3 days or something. And you live with a family, it's like tent camping out in the middle of nowhere,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, you're cooking over or they're cooking over the fires, feeding you. and taking care of you, meeting all your needs, and you just stay out there with them, and you know, you're there to
make, you know,
start churches, you know, make relationships, start, you know, share the gospel, start churches. And
so did you use calendars?
They didn't use watches.
They didn't use watches. Because I hear what you're saying. It's like you can't plan. Okay, so we're going to walk 15 days. We'll be there by 30. You know.
Yeah,
it sounds like
work.
It's very, I'm not sure what the right word
primitive.
Is. Primitive, but just you stay where you need to stay as long as you need to stay there, as opposed to I got to be such and such by such and such.
And it's very difficult to try to plan something with them because they have no concept of planning like we plan. Even if you need, we were told of another missionary that was going to build some equipment, like recreation equipment for a school, and they needed certain supplies, and they needed to be there by the time the people were going to come to do it, and it didn't happen because they just don't, they don't work that way.
Most of the time with what we were doing, though, I mean, I could plan on the really long trips. Most of the time it was me going with a bunch of guys, so Lucinda would stay home.
Nepali guys,
you know,
usually.
Nepali guys, and it was really hard to take her.
It would have been awkward.
You know, when you're out there with a bunch of guys and you don't know where you're going to stay. You know, I'm going to hit this village, and this village. I don't even know anybody in those villages. And it's a Luke chapter 10 deal where you arrive, you pray, and you're looking for that person of peace who's going to say, come stay with me. I'll, you know, and you eat what they give you, drink what they give you, and you share the gospel.
And
on those things,
that way.
I would... You know, I would tell hers, like, I'm leaving, you know, and I hope to be back on Friday, you know, and by the time we left, most villages had cell phone towers where we could call. When I first got there, I was carrying I was carrying a 10-pound, felt like that when you're in a backpack, in a backpack counting ounces, but a great big old satellite phone.
And it wasn't for everyday use either.
Yeah. It cost a lot to use it, and most of the times, by the time you say, hey, I'm out here in this village, it's like, battery dead. You know, so it really wasn't a whole lot of use. After a while, I was just like, I'm not worried about it, you know. And, but, you know, I would always try to, I mean, I have walked from one village to another village, which is like 2 or 3 hours one way, just to call her on a phone, you know, and one time was out on my anniversary, and I did that. You know, it was like, happy anniversary.
Our 25th anniversary.
Oh, wow.
So
that's why it was a big deal.
Yeah. It's like, I got to walk,
well,
guys.
At least you remembered, yeah.
But, you know, you kind of have a tentative, you know, schedule when you do things. And so.
And God does whatever he wants to with
it. Yeah, you kind of have to be open to the Lord's leading on stuff. You know, I mean, if... You know, things are going really well, and it's like, we need to stay here and keep doing this, or, you know, people are accepting Christ.
And or you don't know you're going to get sick and need to come home right away.
Yeah.
And you have a plan where you're going 12 days and taking a guy's hauling a generator on in a basket on their back, and they've got cords and gas for the generator and a projection screen and a sheet to hang up for a screen. He did that with pretty close to the beginning of when we were there, and he was sleeping over a barn, and there were spiders that lived in the wall. And
we're talking big spiders.
Big
like this.
Spiders, and he got bit several times on his legs when he got in his sleeping bag one night, and didn't even know he was going to be sick.
Right,
but God caused the.
The night before the generator broke.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, let's just go home. We're going to have to skip these two villages. It's a 12-hour walk to a
Because that
to
was
the, bus,
the plan is to use that.
Walk down there, get the bus next day, and go back home. And
but they went
the
straight through
home,
12
got,
hours.
Got really sick.
That's when it
really
hit me.
Sick.
And
well, let's change gears just a little bit, because I know And this is one of the things that's fascinating to talk with you guys, because we could talk 10 times and you would have a different set of stories that you could tell each time, because you were there for 8 years.
Yeah, 8 years. Total of 8 years span.
There's a few stories that happened in those 8 years. But let's talk now a little bit about, so in the experience, what are some of the things that that God really taught you, or that you felt like really you saw in a way on the mission field that you probably wouldn't if you've spent 8 years still back here in the States? And I don't know if that's an easy question to pinpoint some things or a difficult one.
Go ahead.
One of the things I think, and I say this a lot in our Sunday school class in different places, but people talk about your faith growing, and really the thing that's going to grow your faith is that God is faithful. Mm-hmm. And when you see what he does for you over and over and over, and you understand God took care of that, mm-hmm. then you have the faith that he's going to take care of things. And I think that's huge in our Christian life, that God is the one that's faithful, mm-hmm. and we know it. And that our knowledge is our faith that he is going to do it. So that's one of my biggest takeaways.
Sure.
It is. And, it's like you're out there on the mission field, and it's, when we left, we had 3 grandkids, and when we finally came home in 2014, we had 8. Mm-hmm. And, so we missed all of them being born, and, a lot of them growing up, like Cale. Mm-hmm.
He was 8 when we left, and 17 or something like that when we came back.
It was like, man, what a blessing, it was for us to, not just to see God work in our own personal ways and providing stuff for us, but just seeing him work, growing his kingdom in ways that it's only God could have done that.
Mm-hmm.
And you just, you see that, and it's like, it's such a privilege for me to be here, and I'm so glad, all the things that I was worried about, all the things that I was trying to hold on to, when I finally turned them over to God, it's like, okay, Lord, I trust you,
to go to the mission field.
It's like he took care of all those things I was worried about and blessed me in those areas more than I could even imagine. But, it was like just seeing God work and seeing, we're church planters, and me personally, I was teaching the book of Acts, it was like, here's what the churches did and what they look like, and, First Timothy and Titus and, all those pastoral epistles, and, here's what those pastors look like and deacons, and just seeing all that stuff come alive, right before your eyes, and seeing God, work is just like, this is crazy good,
mm-hmm.
and it's like, I could have missed this if I would have been very hard-headed, and it's like, sometimes God has to hit me with a 2x4 upside the head to get my attention, but usually I know I'm a better listener now than I was
than you were,
in 2006.
I think so many of us have never been in the spots where you literally, God, I'm not going to make this if you don't come through here,
mm-hmm.
and to see that happen, I think, mm-hmm. is got to be remarkable in so many different cases. So a few years back, myself and one of our former associate pastors and began to feel like, okay, so we want to look at ways to partner our church with some other churches. So we talked to Missouri Baptist. They gave us 2 or 3 leads, and we looked at some. And so we went to Kansas City, checked out a couple of those. One of those was a Bhutanese Nepali church. Now, mm-hmm. at that point, I didn't know anything about the Nepali story and about why are there Bhutanese people in United States, and then there's a story behind the whole Bhutan and mm-hmm. Nepal. I don't have time to go into all that, but
mm-hmm.
And so that's where we kind of landed in partnering with this church. And at that time, I think the timing is I had met you, Tracy, at a dinner because of a mutual friend at an evangelist conference in Springfield, but I didn't figure you were anybody I ever going to see again.
Right.
So we didn't really know each other. We just
with somebody a group, we
with,
met.
A, with a group of guys we met. All right. And I couldn't have told you that you'd been a missionary in Nepal, even though you probably talked about it and shared about it. I wouldn't have necessarily remembered all that. But so we land as a partnership with this church and had it for about a year or so. And then one Sunday, we're greeting new people coming in. Tracy, Lucinda, I think your parents were with you.
My mom and dad were with us.
We came in, and I'm like, I know you from somewhere. But so here you come, somebody that's been a missionary to Nepal that can speak the language and such, thought, is that just a coincidence? And I don't know that we really know the full implications of what that's going to mean for us. But Tracy and David and I went the day before we recorded this to meet with our Bhutanese friends again, or Nepali friends, I should say, in Kansas City, and kind of talk just a little bit about what does that partnership need to look like. We've done a few things together. I've done some teaching for them and different things like that. Now, that's a long event to get to this question, but from our church's point of view and helping our people understand, why is it important for a church to have a connection or a thought process or a way to interact with somebody like the Nepali church, and what can we learn, what can God do in our lives through that connection? That may be a tough question because we haven't pre-prepared your answers or anything.
Right. Well, my thoughts on this is, you know, God commands us, you know, it's like, or Jesus does in Acts 1:8, you know, go, you know, be my witnesses, Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and the ends of the earth. It's like, God brought the ends of the earth to Kansas City.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, you don't have to get on a plane and fly to Nepal where it takes 24 hours to fly there, and, you know, a ticket, round trip ticket's like probably about $2,000, mm-hmm. and then you're going to have to another $1,000 to stay and all that other stuff. It's like, for $20, you can put in your gas, you know, in your car, drive up to Kansas City, and it's like, I'm at the end of the ends of the earth. You know, and so we can be witnesses to them. And those, you know, even like Ruben was saying yesterday, you know, he mentioned at one point about going back home, you know, I mean, going back over there, mm-hmm. you know, and talking with family and different things. And it's like, the things that we do with them in Kansas City can have an impact in Nepal, the actual country. Mm-hmm. And they still have friends and families there. They stay in contact. I mean, me and Ruben was talking about, it snowed in Pokhara the other day, and he had pictures. I had pictures. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought, it's like, he may not know this news from the city that we lived in. And he
knew.
He knew, you know. Yeah. And so, you know, you can have an impact with the people in Nepal, you know. But, you know, just encouraging one another. And I guarantee you, it's like the Nepali people are some of the most gracious, kind mm-hmm. people, loving people. And it's like when you get to know them, I mean, you will be blessed. It's like mm-hmm. You will fall in love with them. Mm-hmm. My mom and dad came for 30 days. And when I always said I love the people, they didn't understand that. And when we were sitting in a hotel in Kathmandu, and we was up on the roof of it looking out. And my mom actually said to me, she's like, I understand what you mean when you say you love Nepali people. She's like, I don't want to go home. Mm-hmm. And that was a big change from when she first got there, because she was pretty like, I don't know if I want to be here.
Right, sure.
You know, but so we can, you know, first off, we're fulfilling the Great Commission to go make disciples, you know, and we are reaching out to places. You know, whether it's the Nepali people or Sudanese, like he was talking about in his church, mm-hmm. and other, you know, just other people groups that there are in Kansas City, is like, we're living in a time, you know, it's a blessing. We have so many immigrants coming, you know, and it doesn't
Even
really
Afghans
matter.
And it doesn't. Afghanis.
Yeah, Afghanis.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm.
Afghanis. You know, we might have different political views on all that, but they are people made in the image of God, and we are commanded to love them. You know, God loves each one of them. They're created mm-hmm. in His image, and so we need to be faithful and go, and you will be blessed, you know, and we don't do it just for the blessing for us, but it's like that's our obedience glorifies God.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's not something we have to do. It's something that we have the privilege of doing.
All right. Well, guys, I kind of hate to end because I know there's just so much more involved in this. But I think we'll wrap it up at this point. Maybe we'll do another one down the road, and we'll have to listen to this and make sure we tell different stories next time, catch some of the other aspects. But first of all, thank you for your faithfulness. Mm-hmm. Thank you for your heart in just helping to lead here at Cedar Grove and be a part. And as we kind of move forward and trying to find out, you know, what are some of the next steps in this partnership we have with the Bhutanese Church. And for me, a lot of it is for more of our people to actually get a chance to meet them, so that they have that opportunity to interact. And I think they will find out how blessed, what a blessing both directions that can be. All right. Well, guys, that'll wrap it up for this episode of the Grovecast. Thank you, Tracy and Lucinda. And this one will be on for a couple of weeks. Well, it's going to be on once we get it up. You can listen to it at any time. And then we've got one more series that I'm aware of that we're going to do with Charlie and Joanne Rubel and talk to them about some of their experiences. And that'll wrap it up for now on the Grovecast.
Thanks for having us.